The midday heat in the African bush is almost unbearable, even for the hardy and the brave. Wildlife seek the shade, and there they wait patiently for the sun to calm down a bit. When I'm in extended foot safaris, I tend to adopt the same routine of taking a break over those hot hours. It makes sense. It is a slot in the day that's entirely without care. There is no urgency. We don't need to get going like in the morning, or we don't need to prepare for the night like in the evening. There is just the heat and the cicadas and the hours. At about 3 we will get going again. It will still be a bit hot then, but there is at least the prospect of the cool down towards evening. Our refuge is the shade of a nyala tree on the banks of a dry ravine. It's still hot here, but there's a little bit of movement, air movement along the ravine now and then. That makes it bearable enough to write or read or just dream or even drift off a bit. Our African companion sat down, chatted a bit, and then went to sleep, right where they had sat down. I gazed at them. They were draped over the earth like abandoned rags, totally surrendered to sleep. I thought if I did not summon them to their feet at about 3, they would probably be quite happy to remain there. Towards evening they would gather some wood, maybe for a fire against predators. Maybe they would prepare food if they were hungry. Then they would lounge around the fire, chatting and telling stories, and they would drift off to sleep again. I looked down at my diary on my lap, the pen between my fingers, my book waiting to me to be read. They did not trouble themselves with any of the thinking that had to go into each sentence in the diary, or with trying to fathom the mysteries or charms of the book. They simply yielded to their surroundings. They lived their situation as it developed. They had a knowledge of it, an instinct and an intuition for it, that they had acquired over a lifetime, or maybe more for some. They knew how to avoid its dangers. Sometimes they would take precautions like constructing a rudimentary structure for protection. But other than that, they seemed to have no desire to change it, or to change themselves. They simply accepted things as they were, and they lived through it. And that they were good. Yes, I came from a very different world. It had made me different. What on earth did they think of my book, my pen, the stuff that came into their world with me? Some of it had to be alien to them. Maybe the gas lamp, maybe the compass, maybe the freeze-dried food, maybe my funny habits. I wondered, after I had left, how would they think about me and my ways and my stuff? And 2 or 3 years later, would they still be talking about me? What would that would those conversations be like? I wonder if I awakened them in them some desire to change, to be like me. If I left some of my stuff with them, or brought more stuff to try and make their lives easier, would it make them want to change to be more like me? To have more and more stuff and to live like me in a world like mine? These thoughts made me sad. Despite my book and my pen and my stuff, despite being in a world where they seemed to be happy, and I should be too, I was sad. And I was sad precisely because of my pen and my book and my stuff, and what it said about me and my world. I stopped writing in my diary and sat for a long time, just staring at the slow shift of mottled sunlight over the leaf mat. I knew that I was just a very thin, and for now, a rare tentacle reaching into their world, from the civilized world. But ultimately, contact between their world and mine was inevitable. It was as inevitable as the changes it would bring to their world, to their lives and to themselves. But would they be as carefree and happy as they seemed to be now, that I doubted. They would be bewildered by what it took to fit into my world. It would be alien to them. Probably from a technical point, utility point of view, it would be more comfortable, but it would be alien to their ways. But they would not recognize that. Instead, they would strive mightily and often awkwardly to be like the people from my world. And they would believe that they were on the verge of achieving something better and wonderful, and convince themselves that they were happy for it. Most of their quest, of course, in their happiness, would be ephemeral. But they would be too busy to see it, except maybe sometimes, when deep down they would know that they long for what they had lost, and then they would be sad.